Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Boy, it has been a frigid past couple days here in the Northeast up in New York City, but I know that a good part of the country is suffering from Arctic air. I guess that's better than the hot air that comes out of Washington. We can have that debate, I guess, at some point. But in any event, very much looking forward to joining you this evening. For those of you that are new to the program, I am Michael Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, of course, the mission of immigration law enforcement and the administration of the laws, providing benefits to immigration to aliens, whether it's citizenship or green cards or the ability to go to school, falls to a division of DHS, an agency that I have declared with a bit of sarcasm, or a lot of sarcasm, should stand for the Department of Homeland Surrender, because the job is just not being done, folks. And we have an administration that appears to be hell-bent on providing a pathway to United States citizenship for unknown millions, perhaps tens of millions of illegal aliens who are currently present in our country, without this country having any idea whatsoever as to who these folks are or why they're here. We are waging a war against terror and a war against transnational gangs, but the front door is open, the back door is open, the windows are wide open, and we've rolled out the red carpet. I think we've lost our mind, but we will talk a little bit about that momentarily. But again, this is my primary issue, and I spent some 30 years working for the former INS. So, as the saying goes, I know from whence I speak. And if you want to read a little bit more about me rather than take up precious airtime reviewing my biography, I would ask that you go to three really good websites. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, michaelcutler.net. Second of all, I have a website that I'm very proud of, TalkBorder.com. That's one word, TalkBorder, TalkBorder.com. And finally, as I have been for years, working with some truly wonderful folks who work at their office in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, a place I love visiting, and that is the folks over at Californians for Population Stabilization, or CAPS. Their awesome website is CAPSWeb.org. In fact, one of my commentaries is posted prominently right on the front of their website, where I said, Obama on immigration laws, we don't need no stinking laws. Of course, stealing a line from the treasurer of Sierra Madre with Humphrey Bogart, Bogey, as he had been known as. So great websites for you to visit, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, last but certainly not least, capsweb.org, and beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, where I am certain they are a lot warmer than the 21 degrees we're experiencing in New York this evening. I will be joined shortly by a very interesting guest, a lady by the name of Amy Ridenour. She is the chairman of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Interesting perspectives. She's a been there, done that kind of gal. She's hosted television and radio programs, and really knows from when she speaks. She's also has done so much research in areas concerning free enterprise and what makes America tick, or in this case, perhaps not tick. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Costco and going green, not as green as in Kermit the Frog, but green as in the environmental movement, so-called, and she will be joining me, I'm going to guess, in about 10 or 15 minutes or so. So until we get to Amy, I want to tell you about an amazing report that is out there right now. There is a website that posted, and the website, by the way, is the Homeland Security News Wire. And they quoted a Center for Immigration Study report, and the title of their article was "Naturalized Security Threats Retain Their U.S. Citizenship." This is really an astonishing set of circumstances, and it's something that I have spoken about frequently. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I've come to refer to comprehensive immigration reform as really being the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And the open borders folks, the people I've come to refer to as the immigration anarchists, love to say, well, Mike Cutler, you're anti-immigrant. And they're smart for using the language. It's a lie, of course, but they understand that if you use the word anti-anything, suddenly you are the bad guy. You'll notice, as contentious as the abortion debate is, nobody's anti-anything. It's about being pro-choice or pro-life. No one is accused of anti-abortion. No one's accused of anti-life. It's pro-choice, pro-life. The other side grabbed an opportunity of making false accusations, using deceptive language, making it appear that if you want immigration laws enforced, then somehow you just hate immigrants. Well, for me to hate immigrants would be kind of difficult. My own mother, may she rest in peace, died of cancer while I was in college. I was 21 when she passed away, and she was in her early 50s, was an immigrant. She came to America as a teenage girl, lived in a rooming house, worked in an umbrella factory for the incredible sum of $3 a week. She was here legally. You know, when I was in high school and college, I served as the president of a local B'nai B'rith group, which is a Jewish social organization. And one of the things we did was to go to Washington and protest outside the White House and ask then-President Lyndon Johnson, basically, let my people go. But it wasn't just about the Jews. It was about all minorities living in Russia who wanted to leave that hellhole back then in the 60s, the Soviet Union, and come to the United States or Israel or England or France or any other country that would have these folks so they could experience religious freedom. And I have to tell you, I think we were successful. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King sent Ralph Abernathy over to address us. He read a statement that Dr. King had written. President Johnson sent us a telegram. That's something that doesn't happen anymore today. I guess they would send you a Twitter or something. God knows. But he sent us a telegram supporting our position and promising to do everything he could to apply pressure to the Soviet Union to get them to release those people. And just a few years later, I can't begin to tell you how gratifying it was for me to sit in that booth at Kennedy Airport as an immigration inspector and admit refugees into the United States, feeling that I had at least a tiny voice, one of many. There were over 10,000 of us who participated in those demonstrations, but that my voice was added to all those others, kind of like a raindrop added to a lot of other raindrops to create a flood. And it was a flood of humanity seeking justice for these folks. So it was an amazing experience for me to sit there in my immigration inspector's uniform and admit into our country refugees that we had worked so hard to get released so that they could come here. Now, I can tell you I haven't changed my position on allowing decent people to come to the United States. I'm not anti-immigrant by any stretch of anyone's imagination, other than the deceitfulness of those folks who are either looking for money or power or both, and want our nation's borders ignored. A couple of weeks ago, I was given the honor of speaking at the Tea Party Patriots Convention in, Tea Party Coalition Convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And one of the points that I made then and I will make now, first of all, our immigration laws exist for two purposes, to protect innocent lives, and second, to protect the jobs of American workers. Boy, what an evil guy I am that I believe that those are two important goals. The other point that I want to make is that I want you to stop and think for a moment. Think about our valiant members of the armed forces, irrespective of which of the five branches of the military they serve in. Their goal is to secure America's borders from outside the United States, in a manner of speaking. They are tasked with keeping our enemies as far from our shores as possible. Is that not a component of border security, albeit external border security? Internally, border security is the mission of DHS, the agency, and you know what I think about it, the Department of Homeland Surrender, forget about Homeland Security, So these are essential issues that cut to the chase of how do you protect America from criminals and terrorists who would do us harm. And in fact, those goals are codified. They're part of the law. If you go to the Immigration and Nationality Act, Section 212, or if you want to look in the criminal statutes, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, they list the categories of aliens we're supposed to keep out of the United States. It starts off with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, or aliens who suffer mental illness and are violent, or sex offenders. And let's remember, we hear so much breastfeeding about, oh my God, they closed Ellis Island. Well, you know what, folks? Ellis Island was run by Immigration and Public Health. It was a quarantine station. In fact, I would suggest that if they reopened Ellis Island, the immigration anarchists, the folks who don't like secure borders, the anti-border security folks, would scream the loudest, oh my God, you've opened the quarantine station. No, it's Ellis Island. We thought you liked it. So let's get rid of the hypocrisy here. The goal is to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer extreme mental illness and are violent or are sex offenders. They pose an immediate direct threat to the well-being of those folks who are here in the United States, whether or not they're here as citizens. Anybody here can be attacked by somebody who's violent or a sex offender or can contract a dangerous communicable disease, irrespective of immigration status. Immigration status doesn't figure into that, does it? And then we get to the criminals. Aliens who are convicted felons, who are human traffickers and drug smugglers and money launderers, aliens whose presence, again, would be harmful to the safety and security of America and Americans. And finally, it's about keeping out those foreigners who would take jobs Americans desperately need. And for people who are out of work, people who are unemployed or underemployed, those jobs are about their way of life. Think of how many Americans now live below the poverty level. It's estimated that 1 in 4 American kids now lives below the poverty level. 1 in 6 Americans altogether live below the poverty level. We have experienced record numbers of foreclosures of houses because of mortgage default. So these are vital issues, and the whole focus of these laws is supposed to be to protect the lives and livelihoods of Americans and lawful immigrants. And then we come to that report that I started talking about. And let me tell you what they said. They said that in point of fact, there are many naturalized citizens who acquired U.S. citizenship through the process that is controlled by Citizenship and Immigration Services, a division of the ever unpopular DHS, who have gone on to bigger and better, doing the work Americans would not do. Yes, they did. They engaged in terrorism. They engaged in espionage. They engaged in the theft of sensitive information and equipment. I also want to be very clear about something. The vast majority of aliens who come to America as refugees, who come to America to become citizens hopefully one day, are loyal to America. They love this country. They love democracy. They want to live out their dreams as American citizens. So I want to be careful that nobody misquotes what I'm saying or walks away from the conversation with the mistaken idea that Mike Cutler is beating up on the immigrants. All I'm saying is that we've got to be careful who we let in. Think of the scrutiny that passengers getting on board an airline have to undergo. We're x-rayed. God only knows if those x-ray machines are even safe. I saw a recent report where they're finally, after how many years, going to make certain that the radiation doesn't exceed safe limits. Remarkable. We've all been getting dosed. Forget about worrying about going into the tanning salons. You know, that woman that got into trouble for the tanning salon, God knows she might have gotten more radiation by going to through TSA at the airport. We don't know. They're first doing the studies now. Isn't that remarkable? So you look at all that scrutiny because we know that 19 terrorists hijacked airliners in the United States on September 11, 2001, and turned those passenger jets into de facto cruise missiles. So those people boy, oh boy, and I do a lot of flying. I wear loafers so that I don't have to take my shoes off and start messing around with my laces because I know the shoes are coming off, my coat's coming off, they're going into my bags, I'm getting x-rayed, my little 3-ounce bottle of shampoo has to be up there on the line. All of this to make certain that we don't hijack airplanes or do damage to the planes. We've had some other people get on planes, Captain Underpants, who wanted to blow up a plane in the skies over Detroit Christmas a couple of years back, and good old Janet Napolitano with DHS said, well, the system worked, right, if you believe that story. And I wrote a commentary where I said, well, if hope is not a strategy, then dumb luck is not a success. It wasn't that DHS prevented it. It was that we caught a break and he didn't. So think about how we're giving out citizenship, kind of like party favors at a party. And in reality, citizenship represents the keys to the kingdom. We'll get back to that. But right now, I believe I have Amy with me.
Good morning,
Amy Ridenour. How are you? Happy Friday. Thank you for being on my show.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be with you.
Great having you on board. So why don't you tell my audience about the mischief that you've been creating? You know, I'm a guy who wields a pretty big ladle, as some of my friends like to say. I'm always stirring the pot. What are you stirring up tonight?
Well, what we have been doing, and that is to say the National Center for Public Policy Research, is going to shareholder meetings and asking the CEOs of some of America's biggest corporations why they are involved with a trade association called the Retail Industry Leaders Association, or RILA, that is imposing quote-unquote sustainability standards on each other and on suppliers, including small business suppliers. From our point of view, it's just like putting another level of government regulation, only minus the government, on business. It'll raise prices, it reduces the ability of small businesses to compete, and it's anti-competitive. So we've been asking CEOs to explain why they're doing this, and so far, we aren't getting a whole lot of really good answers.
How do they react to being asked questions? I love when we can shine the bright light of truth and accountability on some characters, don't you?
Yes, and unfortunately, when business gets involved in public policy, and here I'm referring specifically to things like this where they get together and they make an arrangement that they will regulate each other and not to public benefit, there aren't the transparency elements that we see with government. Now, I'm not one that believes that we're seeing a whole lot of transparency out of government, but at least there's a little bit of it. You know, we do get to reelect the members of Congress every 2 years. There is such a thing as a Freedom of Information Act, which occasionally actually works. There are other things that one can do with government. But when it comes to corporations, there's really very little. Now, I won't say that they don't deserve a certain degree of privacy, particularly the ones that are not publicly held. But if they're going to get together and have arrangements that are in effect another level of government on us, then I think they really should start answering some questions. And that's especially true if they are publicly held corporations and the people asking the questions are shareholders.
Couldn't agree with you more, and I've always said that that should probably be the tactic that we use. You know, by the way, there's something interesting out there, and it always seems that there's always an immigration nexus to so much because, you know, immigration, I like to tell people, isn't a single issue, but a singular issue because of the broad spectrum of challenges that it really relates to. But the Chamber of Commerce created something called the Discover America Partnership, and they got together with the hotel, travel, hospitality industries, the tourism industries, and now with American manufacturing associations. And their goal is to get as many people to be able to travel to the United States as possible. And I understand that. They want as many people to come to the tent so they can grab them by their ankles and shake them till their pockets are, if not empty, at least lighter. But we're getting into an area here of national security. One of the things that this Discover America partnership has been doing has been to push for allowing more citizens from more countries to enter the United States legally without first getting a visa. We're now up to 37 such countries. There were 27 or 26, I forget the number now, on 9/11. So as we're coming under greater scrutiny by our government, in the name of national security. And you've read the stories, I'm sure. A four-year-old girl gets frisked because she turned around and ran back to grandma when she saw all those strange folks and the scanning machines and so forth. The 85-year-old woman sitting in a wheelchair trying to get on board an airplane, getting frisked, searched, whatever. They found something suspicious in her adult diaper. Use your own imagination, folks. God help us all. But the point is, with all that happening, isn't it amazing that the manufacturers stick their nose into an area of national security where they have no expertise and motivation is purely the profit motive? We do need to make these people accountable in one way or another, don't you think?
Well, absolutely we do. I mean, the government should be, but also individuals that lobby for things. Of course it should be disclosed, but I think that one of the things that we have to do is to really ask the questions and then do, to be honest, what we're doing, go on shows like yours, go on the Internet at, for example, our nationalcenter.org website, and tell the American people what's going on. Because, you know, it's extremely difficult for us to know that big companies like Walmart and Costco and Walgreens and others are getting together to say that individual suppliers and small companies have to pay, literally have to pay nonprofit groups to get certified as sustainable so that they can sell to these big warehouses. Like, you know, if Costco is selling, a chair, you know, the
right.
company that's selling them a chair has to go through, or will, if all this happens the way it's unfolding, they have to get verified that they have sustainable practices on everything from, you know, what kind of packaging they use to their greenhouse gas emissions. And they don't just, you know, have somebody drop by and look over and say, yeah, okay, that looks fine, I'll mark it down. They actually have to pay a nonprofit money to get certified that they meet these requirements. Or will, if this all goes through, I should say.
This raises
an
issue.
So this is the sort of thing that we're concerned about, because not only can this nonprofit then go out and change any standards it wants, but it also causes a barrier to entry to any small firm that can maybe it can manage to afford to set up the chair-making factory or whatever it might be and be competitive through some form or another, which is hard enough, though. But to then pay on top of it to a third party to get certified for the right to sell, you know, this does not sound like the free market to me. And the free market is what gives us the best quality goods for the lowest possible price, and it's worth defending.
Well, and that's why capitalism and competition works. But here's something that's disturbing to me. It would be questionable if the government was doing it. But, you know, I spent too many years in law enforcement telling private companies that they're now the police, basically. Doesn't that open the door to corruption and all kinds of other issues to your thinking?
Well, yes, it does. In fact, there is no way on earth that all of these companies are not doing this out of sheer belief in sustainability. I mean, the first question that comes to mind is who's behind the whole idea of sustainability, and
right.
that's a whole can of worms right there. But beyond that, and I'm happy to get into the former, but beyond that, do we really think that Walmart isn't thinking when it's lobbying within the organization for these regulations, how it can get a competitive advantage over maybe some upstart smaller retailers in regions of the country where maybe somebody is giving Walmart a run for its money or might someday in the future? Well, of course it is. I mean, let me give you an example of another issue that's somewhat of interest to the public, which is the regulations that have eliminated our right to buy the standard incandescent light bulbs at the most popular sizes. That did come from the government, and I won't say it didn't. You know, Walmart lobbied for those regulations, and it voluntarily said, oh, we will no longer use those incandescents. See how green we are. And everyone said, oh, you guys are green. What a wonderful company. And then it lobbied the government to force everybody else to do the same thing, thereby getting all the PR from having made the decision first, but not having any competitive disadvantage because everybody else was forced to, whether they wanted to or not. Now, this kind of thing goes on all the time. These guys are competitors. So when they get together and make up some regulations, they are every minute of every day that they're awake figuring out how to do these regulations in a way that keeps away competitors. And competitors and competition are what gives us the good quality prices and the innovation and the low prices that we as consumers want to have.
Here's my question. Which groups, which NGOs, non-government organizations are the traffic cops here? Do you even know which companies these are?
Well, the first place you would want to look if you're going online for information is the Retail Industry Leaders Association. And I know that's hard to remember, but it goes by RILA, R-I-L-A. And the members of that are the ones who are putting this together. Now, then you say, okay, but who would that be? I would look to Walmart and Costco as two of the big guns here. Walmart has some individuals that are high up in its leadership that have worked in the past for then Vice President Al Gore, who, of course, is a noted environmentalist, unless, of course, he wants to fly somewhere. And he and they have the philosophy that it's fine to regulate people, that the free market is a lower goal than these sustainability standards, which, in fact, don't necessarily help the environment anyway. So they got involved in that, and Walmart is not a stupid company. It figured out ways to make that work well for Walmart. And Walmart, being as big as it is, it has some competitive advantages over the smaller companies.
Sure does.
It always will. If you add a little tiny percent of the cost of something, you know, to them it's no big deal if you spend, let's say you spend $300,000 getting certified by somebody overseas as sustainable. Well, you know, you're Walmart. What's $300,000? But what if you're a small company? That $300,000 could be the difference between being in business and not being in business.
Well, you know,
Walmart knows that.
Well, you know, it's funny because if you look, and there was some really good programs on about the giants of industry going back 100 years ago and more, Standard Oil of New Jersey with Mr. Rockefeller, and his tactic was to set up gas stations across the street from his competitors and keep lowering the price and lowering the price until he eventually drove his competition out of business because they didn't have, you know, 5,000 other gas stations. So if he was basically giving the gasoline away at two gas stations and just jacked up the price of gasoline at the other stations by a penny or two, he was making the same income, but he made it impossible for people to compete with him. So he developed a monopoly. Now, there's supposed to be laws against price fixing and collusion and antitrust, but it seems that, you know, this is kind of interesting. I just had this conversation with some of my friends on Capitol Hill. You look at immigration law enforcement, and lawyers look at the laws and say, oh, it's in the law. It says you can't do this. Man's laws are nothing like laws of nature. You know, if you jump off a roof, you got to go splat, not because you're forced to. It's because the laws of nature are inexorable. But if you look at the speed laws, for example, if there's nobody there with a radar gun and a summons book, people ignore them. So the fact that there's laws on the books that say, well, you can't enter the country illegally, or you can't engage in collusion, or you can't engage in price fixing or unfair business practices, if the laws are not being enforced, then they really don't matter. Isn't that true?
That's absolutely true. And also the laws need to keep up with what gets thought of. For example, if you have a trade association that gets together and has voluntary environmental or sustainability standards, then people say, oh, that sounds wonderful. In fact, some of these corporations get involved in this stuff despite not wanting to be involved otherwise because they think that if they don't look green, they will lose customers. And that's somewhat our fault because sometimes we will buy things as Americans because it says it's green without actually seeing if it is green. You know, and I don't pretend to be a big automotive expert, but some of the cars that are supposedly green actually are harder on the environment than some of the traditional vehicles. But because they might have an electric engine in them or some other features, people think, oh, well, that's much more green.
Well, let's go back to your light bulbs. Did anybody think about what happens to the mercury in those light bulbs when the light bulbs ultimately fail and they wind up in a landfill, or if a light bulb bursts and people inhale the fumes?
Only the people who really understand the issue know that mercury is not only bad for the environment, but that many of the bulbs that are alternatives on the market today are not as good for people as the incandescents we're getting rid of. Yeah, but you have to be in the know to know that. And so, you know, in that sense, I have to blame us somewhat, because we will go to a company and say, oh, are you sustainable? Or we'll look on their website and it'll say, you know, got the seal of approval for sustainability.
Yep.
And we'll think, oh, that's a good thing. But it isn't necessarily a good thing. It may just be that they don't do anything better for the environment, yep, while at the same time they cost a little bit more.
Well, I guess, you know, I am partially colorblind and I do have trouble seeing green. Maybe I have an advantage here finally.
Well, being colorblind, that might be the case. But, you know, one thing I encourage people to do is do go over to the RELA website,
yep,
the Retail Industry Leaders Association, and see who the leaders are in their corporations. The current chairman of RELA is also the CEO of Target. So most,
wow,
folks have heard of Target. We went to the Target shareholders meeting last June, and we asked them to disclose the costs of their green programs, and they refused. That, you know, the transparency was not of interest. Well, if they're refusing, that means probably things cost more because of them. So I would just keep that in mind.
This is the big swindle aided and abetted by our government. But I always thought that when you merged government with the methods of production this way, there was a name for it. I was always taught that this was called fascism. Am I out of bounds saying that?
No, when you merge government with business, that is what it's called. And at this point, I wouldn't say that we are exactly merging government with business precisely, at least not in terms of, like, congressional approval, but adding another layer of government, because we have already federal regulations on business, and then we have state regulations on business, and not universally, but in many places, local regulations on business. This is sort of a both private and international, in that there are private companies wanting to regulate each other and their suppliers, whether the suppliers like it or not, they don't get a vote. And there's an international component in that there is something called Agenda 21 that's 21 years old now out of the United Nations. That actually comes from American environmentalists, when you really get down to it, where they want to be able to govern people from a sustainability point of view through the UN. So you'd really have this thing where, on the one level, the private industry is lobbying itself to regulate itself more, while on the international level, they're doing the same thing. You're being under assault, really, if you're trying to, say, have a small business or a medium-sized business, both privately, locally, on the state level, on the national level, and internationally. And we wonder why we don't have enough jobs.
Well, and then, well, forgive me, but look at the immigration angle there. We're bringing in 150,000, roughly, foreign workers every month legally. So you add all of that up, we keep on bringing in more foreign workers, and we're making it more and more difficult for people to comply with these requirements inside the United States. Where does that lead you?
Well, it leads you to more unemployment. And if you like unemployment because maybe you are a government that hands out unemployment checks, then maybe that's a good thing, only for you, not for the country at large. But mostly it's a bad thing. Now, you know, I'm not anti-immigration,
right,
and I'm not saying you are either.
Oh, no, by the way, you, just so you know, I just started out talking before you came on. That's the label that the open borders crowd like to hang on us, because, you know, even if you look at the abortion issue, no matter where you stand, the two groups, the opposing groups, are pro-life and pro-choice, because people know that if you're anti, people are going to think negatively of you.
Right.
But they hung this label of anti-immigration, and I explained how I actually fought to get refugees admitted to the United States when I was in college, and it was a thrill for me to admit them as an immigration inspector. We just need to be careful who we let in. You're not antisocial if you look through your peephole before you allow visitors into your home. You're being prudent, and that's all I'm asking America to do.
Absolutely. You need to be able to control your own borders.
Yes.
Because any country that does not control its own borders, literally in every sense, doesn't really have any sort of national security. And this is a philosophy that, I don't know, it seems to have vanished from a lot of the minds of our office holders, but is really quite true. And it does, obviously, it applies to the immigration issue. That's what everyone would think of first. But it applies here as well. We
sure.
don't have any need to have international organizations regulating our businesses in terms of what they can do vis-a-vis the environment. I mean, we just don't. Even if you are into environmental regulation, we have the EPA, we have numerous other federal agencies that do, many of them, really big ones,
look,
that do environmental
CBP.
Regulation.
You have CBP that regulates what comes into the United States. You have the Commerce Department.
Right. There is regulation after regulation, and there, when it comes to being pro-environment, if you like regulation, there's also on the state level. And if there's a place where there isn't a regulation that there should be, in someone's opinion, we have hundreds of millions of dollars, and this is not an exaggeration, spent every year by environmental organizations to push for more regulation. So just let one of them know that this is a problem, and if somebody else on the planet agrees with you, they'll probably take care of that. So we have this now. We do
There's
not need...
There's a mechanism
need...
in place, but they're short-circuiting. But this seems to be the pattern of this administration, though. If you remember, the president said that Congress failed to act to provide for the DREAM Act, which I oppose because, number one, we have no idea who these folks are, but it was a deceptive deal. He called it prosecutorial discretion. I called it prosecutorial deception in a commentary I wrote for Fox News Latino. But in point of fact, it seems that this is a continuing drumbeat. The underlying theme song is how do you circumvent the legal process that's already there, the mechanisms, the agencies that are in place. That's what's disturbing to me. This just seems to be a continuation, and it's interesting because today the appeals court in Washington, D.C., paddled Mr. Bush over this thing about the recess appointments of people over at the National Labor Relations Board, saying, wait a moment, the Senate was in session. Don't tell us that it wasn't. They were in session, and you could not make a recess appointment. But it's always the end runner again around the Constitution and around the processes. I sat on a criminal jury, two juries, which surprised me because I was an agent when I did that. And both times when the judge, after the trial, charged the jury as we were to begin our deliberations, both judges said the same thing. Whenever there's a trial, it's not only the defendant who is on trial, but it is the system that is on trial. And we have an incredible set of systems in place, federal agencies, laws, procedures, and so forth. And yet this administration, more than any that I could think of, seems to have honed its skills in circumventing all of those institutional provisions that are already in place. Do you get the same sense? Am I getting this wrong?
No, I do not disagree with you at all. It's, you know, we had... And if we care to reclaim it, have the greatest system of government in the history of the world.
Correct.
Where the people actually have a voice, where we can affect change. And from time to time, we in fact do. I mean, every time you switch the House of Representatives from one party to the other, the people have spoken. Well, they don't always appreciate what they got, but they
exactly.
did. And,
yep.
and we're able to do that. And the fact that, you know, unlike some countries, the parties in power do change regularly tells us that however frustrated we might be with some of the outcomes, we can control things if we want to. But when we put on these extra invisible layers,
mm-hmm.
like businesses lobbying each other and then lobbying all the other businesses
or the
that
czars.
Want to sell to them.
Or all these czars that the president has appointed?
Yes, all the czars that the president has appointed.
To circumvent the whole process by which they're supposed to pass muster over in the Senate?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. When we have judges that make law instead of interpreting the law, as we have at least four members of the U.S. Supreme Court, believe in that openly pretty much all
judges.
The time. And unfortunately, the remaining five, it's a whim for some of them. So we have even that there, and that's just talking the U.S. Supreme Court, and we have many other judges. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of people that really are not, as President Obama likes to say, albeit falsely, work hard and play by the rules. The rules are very specific, And there's, you know, if you become, let's say you become a congressman, then you don't get to interpret the law and you don't get to enforce the law. And it works, every one of the branches of government encroaches on the others. Uh-huh. And every one of them should cut it out. If you want to enforce the laws, as some members of Congress like to do, then quit and get a job with the executive branch and vice versa. And if you want to be a CEO of a major corporation, then you're not a lawmaker.
Right.
You're a CEO of a major corporation. And, you know, if that bugs you, well, take your $30 million a year and console yourself in a nice beach house.
And that was how I felt, frankly, about Dick Cheney as the former CEO of Halliburton. I was uncomfortable with those no-bid contracts that Halliburton got. I mean, being fair on both sides.
Well, yeah, this is not a Republican or a Democrat
thing. No, these are American issues, folks.
These are American issues, and, yeah, it's true. I mean, for example, one of the companies that we have criticized, and this is not in terms of the RILA issue, but over time, is General Electric. Because they lobby the government for programs that then enhance their business. Like, they make wind turbines. So if Obama likes wind energy and subsidizes it, they can sell wind turbines. Well, Jeffrey Immelt, who runs General Electric, will tell you, and his PR people are big on it, that he's a Republican. Well, for all I know, he is a Republican. I don't know. But he's lobbying for more federal spending on green energy in a way that is wasteful. It's not wasteful maybe to his shareholders, but it's wasteful to the taxpayers. So I don't care if he's a Republican.
I got
to
ask you a question.
Using his way to lobby for.
You just went down an avenue that just sparked, and I've had this debate with some good friends of mine, one of whom is an attorney. But don't you find it odd when people make campaign contributions to two people who run for the same office?
Well, I won't say odd, because it's obvious what they're doing. They're hedging their bets, so they have a friend, whoever wins.
Heads I win, tails they lose. I'm going to win no matter what.
Exactly. What they're buying is access, and it's very clear that they're buying access, or they would not do that.
Right.
This is not an ideological orientation
in action here.
Yeah, it's not ideological, nor is it, and you hear a lot of people say, oh, I just vote for whoever the best man is, I don't care about ideology. Now, frankly, I think everybody who says that's an idiot, because what your philosophy of government is extremely important. But
absolutely.
Okay, fine, if that's your view. You can't have two guys running for the same office who both need to beat each other because they both have perfect characters.
Right.
If that's the case, don't give to either one of them and go to another election and pick the guy with the ethics in that one. So, but yeah, it's not corrupt in the sense of it being illegal, but it's obvious that it's.
Well, my
not
friend
about the
always
government.
Likes to tell me. She says, "Mike, First Amendment allows it." I said, "Well, just because they allow certain things doesn't mean that it's right."
The First Amendment allows you to go up to somebody and tell them they're ugly. Is it polite? No.
No.
You don't do everything just because it's legal.
Right. Well, but that tends to be the way that lawyers see the universe all too often. But, you know, I just find the whole thing disturbing. And what's more disturbing, and you know, you and I talked about it off the air, we as a people have gotten so dumbed down. Communicating today is becoming a dying art. You know, I was originally an engineering major, but I ultimately took a degree in communications arts and sciences, or as I like to say, I have a BA and BS. But this idea of tweeting. We're going to put down so many characters in a message, and that's going to encompass every possible thought that's essential. The news coverage today is abysmal. 3-minute food fights where equal weight is given to stories involving national security versus some human interest story about a puppy dog that was found in a trash bin somewhere. And it just seems that the news has become trivialized, that the average American is becoming increasingly clueless. And I just think it leaves the door open to too much nonsense, and people are certainly not connecting the dots. You know, you were talking before about sustainability and the environment, and then you saw where they said, well, we're going to put ethanol into the gas. So they took corn that was desperately needed to feed people and livestock, diverted it for the production of ethanol. People starved, livestock starved, prices went up. But now we have ethanol in our gasoline. Does that really help us? So you see all these wacky decisions being made with the justification that somehow this is a good thing. But most people are really clueless as to the unintended consequences or the ripple effect, the ripple impact of so many of these decisions purportedly made in our best interests, you know?
Absolutely. They're either clueless that it's happening or they don't read any of the fine print.
Well, and I think probably the best example of the chutzpah that went with that was Nancy Pelosi talking about the health care bill, saying you won't know what's in it till after it's been approved.
Yes.
Buy a car, we won't tell you what color it is or how many doors or if it's an automatic or a stick shift or what it's even going to cost you, but sign this agreement that says you'll pay for it no matter what, and we'll put it in your driveway, and I'll bet you you're going to love it.
Yeah, she was basically saying this thing is too complicated to explain, just trust me. And this from a government that has not had the best record in delivering things well. That was an appalling thing, although I have to say I don't think that was her most appalling statement in the Obamacare debate. I think that one was when she was asked where the constitutional authority for Obamacare was, and she said twice, "Are you kidding?" To her, it wasn't even worth checking to see if a bill that she put more than a year of her life into to see if it was constitutional. And boy, to me, that says absolutely everything.
Doesn't it? The Constitution and the American people, just a speed bump along the road to where she wants to take us.
Exactly. It honest to goodness, did not matter. And she was, in fact, astonished that a reporter who happened to be from a conservative website asked her. You know,
yep.
She didn't even think you should ask the question.
But look at the reaction that Hillary just had. And, you know, I'm registered as a Democrat. I think the wheels came off their wagon, and it's come off the Republicans' wagon also. These are vehicles that are limping badly. But when she was asked about the Benghazi disaster, said, what difference does it make? They're basically dead. And I had a debate with friends and family over that, and I said, well, it makes a big difference. It's kind of like a bad car accident, and you've got dead people lying in the road, and the police give a breathalyzer test to find out if you were criminally negligent or it was just an accident that couldn't have been avoided. Is that a reasonable analogy?
It is, and you know what happens with very gifted and experienced politicians like Hillary Clinton, but this is completely nonpartisan, they have tricks for getting out of tough questions. And she pulled what I'll call the outrage card.
Yep.
You know, she was asked a perfectly legitimate question, and rather than just answer it, which she did not want to do because it would have made the Obama administration, we have to assume, since she didn't answer it, look bad, she changed the subject to the dead people and basically exploited them.
Yep.
So you have a witness there,
yep,
who's upset about somebody being dead. How can you interrupt them? It wouldn't seem decent.
Well, I still think that the follow-up question should have been, okay, you saw those terrible images, and then tell me, that evening, how did your life change? The families of those dead people, their life has been forever altered, but how did your life change?
That would have been a very good follow-up, and I have to criticize, well, I'll criticize the Democrats who were asking questions, because they were asking stuff like, you know, how did you get to be so intelligent? And how did you get to be so gifted? And,
yes,
you know, those are not questions that are going to get you an answer about Benghazi. But the Republicans themselves should have gotten together and had a plan and been a sequential. I'm going to ask this, and then you ask that. And if she doesn't answer, then you're going to ask the same one until it's incredibly obvious that that question is not being answered. But instead, they all had their individual things. And I will say, some of the guys, like Jeff Duncan out of South Carolina and Rand Paul out of Kentucky,
yep,
and others, did ask good questions.
Yes.
But their time was immediately up. She was able to filibuster, and then it was the next guy's turn, and
yep,
she basically got away without telling us the truth.
Well, I call that tactic walking the dog. But, you know, I do a lot of expert witness testimony, and I've done congressional hearings. I hope to do some more because we know that both parties are pushing for comprehensive immigration reform, something that I think should be renamed the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. But it's always the follow-up that nails the person. And when I've done interrogations with bad guys and they start telling you, well, I didn't quite level with you before, but now I'll tell you the truth, and I always like to say to them in those settings, truth is not an evolutionary process, nor are there different versions of the truth.
No.
You know? But at these congressional hearings, they really do get away with a lot of this nonsense, especially if they have quote-unquote celebrity status like Mrs. Clinton seems to have.
Yes, she does. And another little trick that she played was that she waited until everybody else had testified so she could carefully not contradict anyone.
Right.
The last person to go has a tremendous advantage because they know what the other witnesses are saying.
And you're batting cleanup, and you get to leave the lasting impression.
You get to leave a lasting impression as well. So,
yes.
Yeah, the Clintons, boy, if there are people in America who have experience in how to get out of situations like this, it's Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Boy, they call John Gotti the Teflon Don, huh?
Indeed. Well, at the risk of defending the Clintons, I think Mr. Gotti did a few things they have never done.
No, absolutely. And by the way, I want to be clear. I'm not making that comparison. But in terms of being able to tap dance, boy, they certainly could have shown some choreographers some moves that I'm sure that they hadn't thought of.
Yes, they are very skilled and very intelligent people, but they are not, I'm sorry to say, wedded completely to the truth.
Or apparently to each other.
Well, hey, look, you know, obviously there's
resist.
The joke.
I'm sorry,
they are
you left
still
me
married.
With an opening like that. And
yeah, they are still married. Their
they
daughter
married.
Has two married parents. So we,
yes, they do.
You know, there's
no,
something
I just couldn't
for
resist.
That.
Forgive
yeah,
me for
I,
the cheap shot.
It's out there, let's face it. So,
but, and, you know, it's Friday, and it's been a long week, a frigid week here in New York, so anything that we can get the blood circulating. But, you know, I have to tell you, though, the work that you're doing at the center, the other folks who are there, is so incredibly important. This is about accountability. It's not about partisanship. You know, I would really love to see the day that politicians accept first and foremost that they're Americans. I've seen too many darn eulogies where they will stand up and talk about one of these characters and say, Joe Smith was a great Democrat. Mary Jones was a great Republican. Whatever happened to being a great American? These are not partisan issues. National security is not a partisan issue. Was Harry Truman weak on national security? Was Henry Scoop Jackson of Washington State weak on national security? And you know, it's funny. I noticed that they had the conference in Bellevue, Washington. You should know that in New York, a very famous hospital that has a psych ward is also Bellevue. So,
I don't think they're named after each other, but I get the irony.
You know, but it just gave me that moment of pause when I mentioned it to Judy Kent, your colleague. I said, Bellevue, huh? So, but it is crazy in terms of what we the people have allowed our government to get away with. My dad was a smart guy. He was one of these guys who had an eighth grade education, but he was brilliant because there is a difference between being educated and being intelligent. And he told me, he said, Mike, you will ultimately teach people how they should treat you by demonstrating what you're willing to accept. And unfortunately, I think that for the most part, the American people for far too long have been willing to accept garbage instead of leadership and instead of integrity and decency.
I agree with you completely.
We're getting the government we deserve, not you and me. I mean, we're fighting like crazy every day we get up, and so are others. But the average American who's more fascinated with which starlet got into a car without her panties or who's going to win the Super Bowl, folks, do the lifting. We can't do it alone. You know, I always like to make the comparison that we go to restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way we want it prepared. You don't go into a restaurant and say to the waiter or waitress, hey, pal, just throw some crap on the plate, I'll eat it. And if we don't like the food, we send it back, and if that doesn't work, we tend to get up and leave. Yet time and again, the average American doesn't even know who their elected congressman is, don't know who represents them in City Hall or the state capitol. And that's where a lot of the mischief comes in. These folks realize they're not being watched. You know, workers in most places have a time clock to punch. It's about accountability so that they can't sneak in and say, oh, I was here. Didn't you see me? Uh-uh. We got the time clock. Well, we have a voting record that these elected representatives establish if only we'd be willing to use the computer, and it's very easy, to find out where they really stand on the issues. They come up with these great-sounding bills. They make it sound like all's terrific. If you remember, they had the virtual fence. That was the nickname for Secure Border Initiative Network. Boy, it sounded like they got the military in there. And in fact, I predicted when I was on Lou Dobbs quite some time ago that the virtual fence would do what it was supposed to do, cost a ton of money and stop virtually nobody, which seemed to be the case. Now they're looking to renew the Violence Against Women's Act. Well, who could possibly be against a bill that says violence against women? Well, it actually has caused a lot of Americans to be prosecuted for allegedly assaulting their spouses, so then the spouse can self-petition for a green card since their husband abused them. And by the way, I know of one case where a young lady was abused by her husband, and the husband was the alien, so this little young lady, who's a little bit of a thing, wound up actually getting arrested, and her husband was a professional sports figure. So
they
give it a name, sounds so innocuous and so wonderful, the Violence Against Women's Act, and you think, what kind of a beast would vote against that piece of legislation? It is smoke and mirrors. You know, I think I know who the best presidential candidate should be in another 3.5 years.
Okay.
David Copperfield. At least then we get a professional illusionist in the Oval Office.
We know what we had, at least for a moment.
You know? But doesn't it astonish you, though, that they come up with these names for bills, that the average American, like reading the newspaper but just looking at the headline, they see the name of the bill, and they say, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Or they name it after somebody, and then it's as if you were against this person.
Yes.
Like the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which
yep.
is about helping trial lawyers make money, but supposedly if you're against it, you wanted this lady, Lilly Ledbetter, not to get paid well. Well, that's not, it's unrelated. Okay, you know, we're not supposed to know that.
How do we turn this around when so many of the news programs, I mean, people know that these programs are BS. I mean, I've had so many people come up to me when they do public speaking events. And by the way, if you folks know of any opportunities, let me know, and I'm sure you'd be interested in knowing for the issues that you raise, Amy. By the way, what's your website talking about that? Because I'm about to put my website out there, and the three of mine are michaelcutler.net and talkborder.com and the ever-popular capsweb.org. I'm sure you have a website that you would like my listeners to go to.
For sure. It's nationalcenter.org.
And you're the chairperson.
I'm the chair. I say chairman. I don't go for PC stuff.
Okay. And that was the reason that you were focused on companies that manufacture chairs. Is there a connection there?
No. I just checked the comments.
I'm just trying to keep it real, you know.
Okay. No, I don't have a particular interest in chairs.
Okay. Just making certain about that, Amy.
Okay.
I have to tell you, it's absolutely a delight having you join me. We have to have you come back and hit some more of these issues. I mean, your background is really quite astonishing. You've really been in this battle for a very long time. You're the voice of reason here, you know?
Well, I don't hear that often, so thank you.
Well, and we don't get reason very often or truth. You know, I keep thinking of Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men. You know, you can't handle the truth. No, we can handle the truth. They just don't want us to have the truth.
Exactly. They can't handle us knowing the truth is much more like it.
You think?
Yeah, I think.
Well, and that's why I think that what you're doing is so incredibly important, and that's why I have this program, because I'll be honest with you, I'm absolutely outraged and disgusted with what passes for the evening news these days. The overused, you know, news alert, bulletin, flash, whatever. The graphics that were designed originally for people under the age of 7, you know, the graphics and the noises. We really do suffer ADD as a country, don't we?
Yeah, and we seem to want to have it more, because when you do things like that, you only increase it. People don't get any experience in concentrating for more than 30 seconds, and so it does seem odd to them. You know, you think about what our ancestors, even like the books they read, ordinary people,
yep.
You know, with these sentences that went on and on and on, and they didn't think anything of it.
Well, I have a friend who's a former college professor, and he made an interesting point, and I'm just curious what your thought is. He said, you know, back when Johnny Carson was the ruler of The Tonight Show, and before him, Jack Parr. Boy, that's a name I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard in a long time. And by the way, celebrity is fleeting. There was a time when Jack Parr probably couldn't have walked down the street without being jumped on by everybody, or Johnny Carson, and half the people alive today were born after these guys died.
That's right.
But Johnny Carson would do a 20-minute segment. They'd break for a commercial. And back then, we couldn't, you know, we didn't have 500 stations to watch. And they used to say that you could actually tell when The Tonight Show was in a commercial break because the water levels in the cities around the country would drop. remarkable, isn't it? People took a bathroom break because it was a 20-minute segment, and you didn't have a videotape machine, so either you saw it or you didn't. If you missed it, it was over. There was no DVR. But Johnny Carson gave you these 20-minute segments. So prior to that, people could sit there for 2 hours and listen to a lecture, and it was okay. The 20-minute segments on The Tonight Show got people into the mode where in 20 minutes they were expecting that commercial break, I guess, to go to the bathroom or something. Do you know that now they say the average American attention span is between 3 and 4 minutes, which, by the way, coincides with the length of the average news report on programs like CNN or Fox or MSNBC? It's conditioning.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's conditioning.
Yes, I agree. It is. And we can fix it ourselves by concentrating on things like, you know, read a book once in a while because they don't have breaks every 4 minutes. But, you know, if people don't choose to, then they don't choose to. And I don't know exactly how we get around it because, you know, technology isn't going to go back in the box.
No, it certainly isn't. And I think we really have to convince people that it's in their own best interests. You know, most people are grammatically challenged. They only conjugate verbs in the first person singular. One of the most outrageous moments I experienced was about a year after 9/11. I had a reporter from Associated Press call me at home. And I think he asked me, there were two questions I got asked. I don't know if he asked me the first, but certainly the second, or the statement drove me straight up the wall. I was asked if I wanted to sneak into the United States, could I do it? And of course I could, but why would I share that information with somebody? You know, I was an agent for 30 years. Why would I have a conversation in public that could endanger national security? And I don't know if you remember this. There was a colonel that was covering Osama bin Laden. And if you remember, bin Laden used to make those miserable videotapes where he would end it with death to America, and he'd be standing there with that microphone holding it almost like a nightclub singer.
Yes.
And this guy came on the air and said, you know, if they only would look at the rock formation behind him, they could figure out exactly where he is. And I'm thinking, you nitwit, that's the kind of thing where you pick up the phone, you call the Pentagon, or you call your friends over at Intel, which is what I would have done, and said, I have an idea you might want to think about. No, he did this on national TV, and I remember 2 weeks later, there was another videotape that had bin Laden released, and suddenly there was burlap covering the wall behind him. And I thought, someone's listening to this guy. So this idiot reporter calls me up after asking me how someone could sneak into America without detection, and then said to me, he said, you know, they blew up New York, but that was New York. I live in Ohio, and now some guy wanted to blow up the mall a mile from where I live with my family. This is getting serious. Well, I will spare you and the folks listening out there my choice of language, but I recommended that he attempt a couple of anatomical impossibilities. Let me put it that way. And I thought, my gosh, how stupid and self-centered can you be that you can say to me, yes, they blew up those buildings in New York, but that's not my problem. So what I did, I went to John Hostetler, who at the time chaired the House Immigration Subcommittee, and I said, John, the next time you call me for a hearing, we need to do something about that. I said, could you possibly get a map created of the United States that shows where all of the victims of 9/11 came from? And he did. And when I did my next hearing for John Hostetler over at the House Immigration Subcommittee, I made the statement that no American city is safe if any American city is attacked. And John, very wonderfully, made certain to have that map posted in a prominent place. It might have been under the rotunda. I'm not sure where it was. But I was assured that this really big map was to be posted in a place where most members of both houses of Congress were likely to have to walk by it several times a day.
That's great.
But, you know, we've got to get people to understand, folks, we're not talking about a hypothetical situation. This is your future. This is your children's future. In theory, it's wonderful to help people around the world, but you don't give money to charity when your own children are going to bed hungry at night. The reality is we take care of our own first. Whatever is left over, we'll take care of that. You know, I just find this whole business so disturbing and so astonishing. You know, how many times do you see a terrible tragedy where a car catches fire or there's a building fire or a boat capsizes, and the parent is dragging their own child out of that conflagration first, and if they can go back for others, they will. But no one will ever criticize a parent for rescuing their own child first. No one should be criticizing America for looking out for American citizens first. Is that an unreasonable position?
No, indeed. The purpose of our government is to take care of American citizens. You know, its existence is predicated on the consent of the government, or governed, excuse me.
Well, today you might have gotten it. It might have been a Freudian slip there.
No, it certainly wasn't Freudian. quite the opposite. An appalling slip. But it's the consent of the governed, but also for their interests. You know,
yeah, government
our
of the people, by the people,
for
the people,
interests.
As Lincoln said.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, you look at the way they've twisted this thing sideways, it's more like a pretzel than anything that anyone could recognize, and you say to yourself, how did we allow it to happen? Well, that's the problem, folks. We, the people, did allow it to happen. And
therein lies
the problem. And that's why, towards the end of my programs, I always like to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's really so important to please get involved. You might think, well, I just have this tiny little voice. What difference does it make? Think of all the statues that you see in the parks. Those were statues that were erected to commemorate that singular person who at a moment in history made all the difference. And that every one of us has that same potential today. Sitting on the sidelines isn't going to do it. We really need to be actively involved. And your activism and the activism of your organization really sets a high standard for the sort of activism that's so important, especially today, Amy.
Well, thank you very much.
Why don't you give your website out one more time, and I'll let you begin your weekend, if you will. I see I've got a caller. I'll pick up that call in a moment. Caller, if you could just hold for a moment. Amy, do you want to give out your website one more time?
Sure. It's nationalcenter.org.
Excellent. Short and sweet, and I'm going to go visit it as I always do. And I thank you for visiting with us this evening, and I wish you a great weekend. Stay warm. And we'll have you back real soon. How's that sound?
Sounds good, Mike. God bless you.
Thank you so much. Be well. Thanks again for joining me. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Caller, hi. You're on with Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hey, this is Billy here.
Hey, Billy. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm calling from Austin, Texas.
Okay. Beautiful city. I've been down there.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Pretty nice. A little windy.
Okay, well, probably warmer than the 21 degrees we have here in New York City tonight. What can I do for you, Billy?
I just wanted to know about how you're talking about the technology going on.
What do you mean? Which technology? Hello? Are you there, Billy? Okay, I think we've lost Billy. Billy, you there? Going once, going twice, going three times. Okay. Anyway, folks, I just want you to know how much I enjoy getting together with you on Friday evenings. As I mentioned to Amy, the whole point to this program is to offer an alternative to what unfortunately passes for the evening news, but in reality, not so much. Democracy is dependent upon citizens knowing the truth, having the facts at their disposal so they can make reasonable and intelligent decisions, not only when it comes time to vote, when it comes time to make purchases, when it comes time to make that phone call to your elected representative. We often don't think about members of Congress during the year. Suddenly the election is upon us and we get very involved and, oh, or maybe not so involved, I want to believe we're all involved, and we think, well, who do I have to vote for? What am I going to do? What's the issues? This process is ongoing every day of every week, folks. Members of Congress, members of your city council and your state legislatures are busy passing laws and making decisions routinely. They do it all year long. They need guidance from us. For those of you who run companies, I am certain that you interact with your employees on a regular and routine basis to make certain that they meet the objectives that you establish for them and for your company. If you are an employee, I am certain that you hear from your boss probably more frequently than you would like to. Where our elected representatives are concerned, folks, we are the boss, not them. We are. We the people. Abraham Lincoln got it right. This is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That means that we have an obligation. We have a responsibility. And our responsibility is to make certain that those who represent us truly represent us. We can only accomplish that objective if we stay informed and get involved. That's why I'm here. There are other programs like mine that are out there. I ask you to do whatever you can to educate yourself about all the issues that you can. Please get involved. Again, democracy is not a spectator sport. Again, my three websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, and capsweb.org. Again, as always, pleasure spending Friday with you, this wonderful, it's 1 hour and 10 minutes now. We ran a little bit long, but time flies when you're having fun, and Amy certainly was an excellent guest, and I will do my best to get her back on again. Hope you enjoyed the program, and if you did, all I ask is that you please tell your friends and neighbors to tune in to the Michael Cutler Hour, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on Friday evenings. So long, everybody. Have a terrific weekend. See you next week.